Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho lawmakers discuss personal property taxes, big trucks, and many other issues at League of Women Voters' legislative wrap-up session today. Moscow School District representatives make their case for $10.8 million May 21st school bond levy. And the first person ever charged under an ag gag bill has all charges dropped. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Thousands of May Day anti-capitalist activists are planning a rally at Seattle Central Community College at 6 p.m. today. Seattle police say marchers who have gathered so far and marched through downtown Seattle have been peaceful and no arrests have been made. As the agriculture industry began their two-day conference on so-called ag gag bills today, the first person ever prosecuted under a specific ag gag law had her charges dropped. Yesterday, the Draper City, Utah prosecutor dropped charges against Amy Meyer of Utah, who videotaped a sick or injured cow being moved by a tractor. Meyer was filming operations at the Dale Smith Meatpacking Company from a public street, but that did not stop charges from being filed under the state's new agricultural operation interference law, signed into law by Governor Gary Herbert March 20th. Meyer told Will Potter of the Green is the New Red website she filmed with her cell phone, quote, a live cow who appeared to be sick or injured being carried away from the building in a tractor as though she were nothing more than rubble. She told the slaughterhouse manager, who told her to stop filming, that she was on a public right-of-way and had a right to film. Police arrived and charged her with violating the ag gag law after the manager claimed she had trespassed. The police report noted no damage to the barbed wire fence. Republican Utah Representative John Mathis, who sponsored the bill, called undercover investigators working in the agriculture industry animal rights terrorists and said video recordings of animal abuse are propaganda. Green is the New Red pointed to Mathis's ties to the agriculture industry by quoting his opening remarks at a legislative hearing on his bill. Mathis said, it's fun to see my good ag friends in this committee. All my good friends are here. Lawmakers in Nebraska, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Vermont are considering similar ag gag bills now. Pennsylvania's bill criminalizes those who record an image of or sound from the agricultural operation, or who uploads, downloads, transfers, or otherwise sends footage on the internet. The North Carolina bill is called the Commerce Protection Act and does not mention factory farms or slaughterhouses. The person behind the Green is the New Red website, Will Potter, said he was denied press credentials at today's and tomorrow's Agriculture Alliance conference in Virginia called Activists at the Door, Protecting Animals, Farms, Food, and Consumer Confidence. The Alliance wrote back to him, the Alliance Summit is specifically for Alliance members, donors, and other invited stakeholders affiliated with the Alliance. Potter said the Alliance had previously sent out emails asking reporters to register to attend the conference and said the response from the Alliance public affairs manager was a lie. Reviewing the 2013 Idaho legislative session today, Democratic 5th District Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow said the session was remarkable because with all the expectations, the personal property tax on business equipment would be totally repealed. That is not what happened.
Something did happen, which does affect small businesses and will affect revenue for the state of Idaho. And that passed after weeks to months of not really And the business personal property tax repeal that did happen was a compromise that actually had been proposed a couple years ago, and it passed pretty easily. And I think that was once the total repeal folks gave up, which they did. I don't know that they've given up for the years to come, but they gave up this session. And we'll see.
State Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow at a Moscow League of Women Voters session today, reviewing the 2013 legislative session with Idaho's 5th District legislators. Republican Representative Cindy Agidius found many of the business owners she spoke with about the personal property tax on business equipment were not too concerned about the tax.
The big businesses that were I was talking to, they were saying, hey, we're used to this. We're okay with it. Let's not hurt our counties. And so, you know, even here in Latah County, a lot of our businesses I talked to said, our bigger business said, no, we're used to this. Don't repeal it. We're all right. The biggest complaint I got from people was just what a pain it was to do the paperwork of it.
That was Representative Cindy Agidius. A big issue this past legislative session for Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow was no salary raises for public employees.
No raises again for them this year, even though they took over $12 million in unpaid furloughs to help us balance the budget since the downturn in the economy.
Ringo also said the Medicaid expansion needed to happen, but it didn't. And she also said Idaho is over-incarcerating youth.
I was able to initiate a study on juvenile corrections in the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee because there is evidence that Idaho is conspicuous in over-incarcerating when we could do better at having preventive programs. I think revenue is a huge issue, although I was relieved at the way we did the property tax.
That was Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow. Representative Cindy Agidius, who just served her first session in the state capitol as a state representative, indicated the big truck law that may work well in southern Idaho does not serve to preserve the safety and infrastructure costs for northern Idaho highways and roads. The law allows tandem trucks up to 129,000 pounds on many highways. The old limit was 105,000 pounds. In most cases, it will be up to the Idaho Transportation Department to decide if the larger trucks are allowed on specific roads. Agidius said trucks are not paying for the damage they cause to Idaho roads.
There's a reluctance to make the trucks pay their fair share because they're worried about chasing business out of the state. That's where their mentality is with it. And not to mention that I would say that during the truck fight, they were passing around studies that said that the studies that they had performed on the 98-foot long, 198,000-pound trucks actually distributed the weight more evenly and caused less destruction to the roads than what we had in place now. And so we have these two studies fighting each other, and there is a very strong sentiment against raising any taxes for any reason down there.
Any taxes.
And so, you know, it's going to be an interesting conversation because we can't fix our roads without some increased fees or increased taxes. And so it'll be an interesting session. I'll certainly be pushing for something that will help improve our roads in the north. And I might add that if it doesn't come north, some of that money, I'm not going to vote for it. So we're definitely going to have that conversation.
That was Representative Cindy Agidius of Moscow speaking to the Moscow League of Women Voters this afternoon. Senator Schmidt agreed with Agidius and warned citizens of Idaho to be aware of the issue.
The funding proposals that came forward at the end had to do with addressing heavy trucks. They had to do with gas tax, increased registration fees, increased taxes on auto parts. So, in other words, and then you see the 129,000-pound truck bill go through. So it seems to me, even though we may not have lunches with lobbyists. I think I know who's pushing the boat here. And the people of Idaho need to see this clearly. The study showed that the wear and tear on our highways is being actually covered, that cars do. If you want to make it a use tax, the wear and tear that cars do is being paid by their gas tax. Trucks aren't paying for their fair share.
Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow, KRFP citizen journalist Marie McHugh contributed this report. We'll have more from the League of Women Voters Forum on the evening report tomorrow and Friday's morning mix, plus extended excerpts on the special Friday edition of the evening report at 5:30 on Friday. Moscow school district officials told a group of citizens last night about unrepairable boilers, insufficient windows, damaged porcelain, and leaky roofs that can be taken care of if the $10.8 million Moscow school bond levy passes by the needed supermajority May 21st. Superintendent Dale Kleinert noted the district has not added any square footage or had any major renovations since 1991, although the district did $1.9 million in repairs in 2005. The bond includes $710,000 to replace single-pane windows at two schools and more than $6 million to make a series of other improvements. Here's Superintendent Dale Kleinert.
Boilers and water heaters, about $500,000 into the boilers and electronics. There are some water heaters around the district that have failed lately. There's one out in the field house that actually exploded last fall during football season, and it's a huge container hot water heater like you'd have in your house, except probably five times bigger, and it had a gas explosion, and luckily it exploded up instead of out, and no one was injured, but it really told us that this stuff is old, it's worn out, and it needs to be replaced. And so about $507,000 in that area. Roofs, this is a big one. Even though we've replaced many, and we've spent $400,000 to $500,000 each summer on roofs for the past several summers, these are the ones that must be replaced in the next 3 to 5 years, or our buildings will be ruined. At almost $1.8 million. The roof pictures that you see right there, those are brand new roofs that were replaced in the last 2 years, McDonnell School and two pictures here at the high school. Plumbing and bathrooms, we've got about 30 bathrooms in the district that need repair or replacement. Some of the bathrooms will cost more than others. As you can see, this type of a urinal, it will be fairly easy to bring in a new one, stick it on the wall just like the old ones. But there are lots of bathrooms like this that have the plumbing into the floor, and that's going to cost some more money to replace those than some of the others. And so some of the bathrooms will be cheaper than others, and the engineers have told us that the 30 bathrooms will be about $1.3 million.
That was Moscow School Superintendent Dale Kleinert speaking at a League of Women Voters forum on the $10.8 million school bond levy, which district residents can vote on Tuesday, May 21st. The forum took place last night. Kleinert also said passing the bond will mean the school can spend $610,000 to move high school science labs to the school's 3rd Street annex for better air venting. The bond levy also includes $1.5 million for developing ball fields on land the district owns at Mountain View Road and Joseph Street. If the bond passes, the city of Moscow will kick in another $1.5 million for the project. Also at last night's forum, Moscow Middle School principal Kevin Hill spoke about the need to repair the field house on D Street.
The proposed addition to that goes about 20 feet out to the north side of the building as it is. It increases locker room space. I know a few of you have been on the tours that we've been over there, but you have a girls' locker room that is maybe a third of the size of the room we're in right now. That is used approximately by 250 female students a day. That's not counting our athletics after school for both the middle school and the high school that come there. We had an incident yesterday where Sandpoint came down for a tennis match and had nowhere to change. The middle school's in session. Our kids are out there using it. So they can't get into our locker room. The weather's not perfect out there. Changing on the bus is not the best idea. This plan actually has some varsity high school level locker rooms that would be out on what is the bare field level. So any visiting teams would have a place that they could come in and use without disrupting classes at the middle school level at that time.
That was Moscow Middle School Principal Kevin Hill at last night's League of Women Voters School Bond Election Forum, which was held in the Great Room of the 1912 Center. A member of the audience asked the panel if the state of Idaho provides any maintenance money for schools. District Business Manager Deb Adair said that hasn't happened recently, but the legislature did act this year to bring a bit of maintenance money into school districts from the lottery.
This year, the current legislation for the next coming year has restored one-third of those lottery dollars that must be used for school maintenance. So, excuse me, I don't know what that means for us right today. However, I do know that our school district, because we have so many old schools, old buildings, that we spend more in that just to do the bare maintenance in our schools.
Moscow School District Business Manager Deb Adair. The bond levy needs 66.7% of the vote to pass. Superintendent Kleinert said Idaho and Kentucky are the only two states that require such a large supermajority to pass school bonds. Absentee voting for the school district's $10.8 million bond levy is going on now at the county courthouse, and applications for absentee ballots are available on the school district's website. The vote will take place Tuesday, May 21st. First, with most voters going to the Latah County Fairgrounds between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. that day. There will also be a polling place in Viola. The May 21st ballot will also have Latah County Library Board races and a Highway Commission election. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow. The intersection at Main and D Streets will be down to one lane starting today and through Renaissance Fair weekend as workers from Baker Construction cut into the pavement to repair the advanced traffic detectors that control traffic signals that were damaged during construction of the new Senex gas station there. The repair work will impact north and southbound traffic on US 95 on the north side of Moscow. Traffic on D Street for the block east of Main Street will be diverted one block north to E Street. Although the repairs to the advanced traffic detectors will take place today, crews will keep traffic off the affected lanes during the weekend until the pavement cures. Whitman County Sheriff's deputies arrested Washington State University graduate student Jacob P. Forster of Uniontown yesterday for attempting to poison his wife in her sleep. The 32-year-old Forster is scheduled to appear in Whitman County Superior Court today on a charge of attempted murder. Forster is a chemistry student and has been married to his wife for 6 years. Sheriff Brett Myers told the Daily News the wife discovered the attempted poisoning March 27th, but did not report it to police until last week. Second District Judge Jeff Broody of Lewiston has set a June 26th deadline for motions in the post-conviction relief motion filed by 27-year-old Silas Parks, who was convicted of voluntary manslaughter for strangling his wife, Sarah Parks, in Moscow in 2009. Parks was also convicted of another count of manslaughter under an Idaho law which allows convictions for killing an unborn fetus, and one count of first-degree arson for setting fire to the Vandal Drive duplex apartment in Moscow in an attempt to cover up the strangulation death. Parks was sentenced to 40 years in prison in a 2010 plea agreement and is not eligible for parole for 20 years. He is contending Moscow attorneys Ray Barker and Charles Kovis gave him ineffective counsel by convincing him he could not plead guilty to charges less serious than voluntary manslaughter. Parks also contends he has rapid eye movement behavioral disorder or some similar disorder that can cause someone to physically act out violent dreams while in the REM stage of sleep. Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson told the Daily News, "We've already responded to the initial proceeding, which was made more than a year ago, and we made a motion to the judge to dismiss it. We don't believe that's a legitimate reason to ask for any relief." U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood has said federal legislation going through Congress will mean the Federal Aviation Administration will not have to close 149 flight control towers at small airports, including the one at the Lewiston-Nez Perce County Regional Airport, which was slated to close June 15th. The legislation will also prevent the closure of the control tower at Walla Walla Regional Airport. President Barack Obama is expected to quickly sign the bill that shifts up to $253 million from various accounts to keep the control towers open. The control towers were slated to close by last month's budget sequestration. King County sheriffs say the 71-year-old man who packed the parachute given to the famed skyjacker dubbed D.B. Cooper in 1971 was the victim of homicide by blunt force trauma at his home in Woodinville. King County Sheriff Sergeant Cindy West said police have no leads in the case and they have no reason to believe the death is related to the Cooper case. The mysterious man who called himself Dan Cooper asked for $200,000 and four parachutes after hijacking a plane flying from Portland to Seattle in November 1971. He got the money and parachutes, and the plane took off from Seattle, supposedly to take Cooper to Mexico at his direction. Cooper parachuted into freezing rain from the plane's rear steps into the night near the Oregon-Washington border. Cassie, who packed the parachute, said in a 2008 interview, "The FBI brings him garbage and old parachutes every few years." He told the Associated Press, "Every time they find squat, they bring it out and open their trunk and say, 'Is that it?' And I say, 'Nope, go away.' Then a few years later, they come back." Cassie was asked to identify a silk parachute found by children on a recently graded Southwest Washington road in 2008 and said it wasn't one of the parachutes he packed. Some of D.B. Cooper's money was found on a Columbia River beach by a child in 1980. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it will be clear to mostly clear through the weekend with a couple partly cloudy evenings. Temperatures will be around 32 tonight. Tomorrow's high 64 with winds gusting up to 20. Partly cloudy 39 Thursday night. Friday's high 66, Friday night's low 42, and highs of 70 Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with lows in the low to mid 40s. Currently, fair skies, 53 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to pick up a KRFP hero at the KRFP Greek food booth at Moscow Renaissance Fair Saturday or Sunday, or both, in East City Park in Moscow. We're also taking volunteers for shifts at that food booth at the email address rik82@yahoo.com. That's rik82@yahoo.com. I'm Lee Robartis. Marie McHugh assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a present evening coming up. Building Bridges, the weekly labor report from Pacifica Radio, and Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica as well. At 6:30, at 7:30, music and entertainment throughout the night begins with Emily on the air. Stay tuned for more. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. KRFP Moscow.